Hey, it's Davinia here, and this season we're proudly partnering with Nosso, an awesome new app created to help parents invest for their children's futures with the support of their close family and friends. Nosso offers investment products like junior stocks and shares ISAs, as well as general investment accounts and much more. And they make gifting from family and friends super memorable with messages and photos, which means any money you gift on behalf of the children in your life has a lasting legacy. And while I've got you, a quick reminder that doors are now open for the latest cohort of the Raincheck Private Members Club, our final cohort of 2022. Link to find out more about all of the above is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers. Those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by the wonderful Ruth Penfold Brown. Ruth is a consultant, advisor and coach who helps humans grow. I'll let her explain more about what that means during the course of our conversation. Ruth, thank you so much for being here today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Hello, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your brilliant pod. You're exactly right. I'm all of those things. I have a background in people and culture in tech companies with the likes of Shazam, which most people would have heard of, and also on Fido and BP Launchpad. And these days, what I do is I help entrepreneurs and people to build and scale purposeful companies whilst scaling themselves at the same time. But honestly, what I'm most passionate about is supporting people pleasers like myself, self-confessed recovery people pleaser over here, to step into the most expansive versions of themselves and to really kind of set themselves free, set boundaries and claim agency over their lives.
Oh my God, like that last part of what you said resonates so deeply with me on many, many levels. And I'm sure, I mean, just based on some of the conversations I've had over the last 4 years with so many of the rainmakers, it's something that lots of us as women, and I'm sure people in general, but as women, you know, there's a particular challenge to make sure that we are setting appropriate boundaries and recognizing our value, making sure that we're knowing our worth and all of those sorts of things. And those boundaries, of course, are not just from a professional perspective, but also in our personal lives and relationships. So we'll get into all of that during this conversation, I hope. But of course, Ruth, as you know, this podcast is all about women and wealth and our relationship with money and some of the stories we tell ourselves over whether or not we are worthy of enjoying the money that we work so hard to generate. So I suppose my first question to you is, how has your relationship with money evolved over the course of your life?
Oh, and that's such a big word, isn't it? Worthy, whether we're worthy.
Yes.
And I think that definitely strikes the chord of the struggle of the people pleaser. My journey with money has been vast and expansive. I very much entered into adulthood from a kind of scarcity mindset. I very early made some quite negative choices for myself that put me in a quite destructive relationship where I was the sole breadwinner. And that meant I was always chasing my tail and struggling to make ends meet, pretty much, actually. From the outside, I looked like someone having a great career, building a recruitment career, all that kind of stuff. But from the inside, what it was you know, really, I was living in survival mode. I was living paycheck to paycheck, digging myself into debt to support the relationship that I was in. And I'd actually handed over how do I want to say this? Almost like the control of my financial well-being to another person who, whilst they didn't control my bank account firsthand, they were able to manipulate and control me. So therefore they were in charge, right? So then when I was sort of coming into my late 20s, I began to awaken from this life, is the best way that I can put it. I began to awaken gently from this life through the inspiration of people that crossed my path, honestly. And when I turned 30, so that was 12 years into that relationship, when I turned 30, I realized the pain became unbearable and I set myself free at that point. And setting myself free from a financial standpoint was actually quite an interesting moment, because I had amassed a lot of debt through being in that relationship. So I was in a very dark place. And I then had to sort of put myself through a financial recovery, which we can obviously get into a bit more detail with. But I put myself through a financial recovery. But by doing so, I had to lean into starting to spend money on myself, which was something that I'd never done. And for anybody listening who has been in that type of relationship with another person, you will know that you serve that other person and that, like, everything else before yourself, right?
Yes.
So a huge part of me developing financial well-being, apart from the practicalities of my financial recovery, were actually just learning to spend money on myself. And to sort of dip that's not as easy as it sounds if you're hardwired to live in a different way. And then bringing it up to date, you know, now I'm delighted to report a full financial recovery. I have a very healthy bank account, but I'm actually now working, to be honest, on starting to take on debt again, but in a balanced way. So I would say it's a journey that continues, but it's definitely been an evolution for me.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for sharing those experiences so candidly. And as you say, you know, we can delve more deeply into some of those themes there. But, you know, one of the things that leaps out at me, of course, is that, you know, this theme of economic abuse. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we saw a spike during the pandemic, and that's really where it's taken prominence. Very recently in the UK, HSBC, have launched a campaign. There are billboards, I think, starting in London, but I think are being rolled out nationwide to try and highlight some of those issues. And also to offer, you know, a helpline for anybody that might be experiencing economic or financial abuse, which of course is very closely related with other forms of domestic abuse and violence. And I think for a long time, it was one of those things that, and particularly in the context of a relationship or a marriage, it's one of those things that I think is easy for people to explain away or to believe isn't necessarily happening, or, you know, this sense that you're not necessarily going to be believed, because abuse in lots of people's mind only manifests itself physically. And so the idea that you could be coerced or controlled, or, you know, have your movements and your actions influenced to such an extent that you might harbor guilt about enjoying the money that you work so hard to generate is really, really an interesting thing, and just speaks to how powerful, you know, certain people can play in terms of the relationships that we have in our lives. So that's really interesting. I mean, one of the other things that you touched on, of course, you know, when we think about money scripts, and, you know, we talk all the time in the Rainmaker community about the psychology of money, because, of course, our relationship with money is more than just our earning potential and how many different income streams we have, of course. It's about how we feel about money. And, you know, as we touched on, you know, that worthiness that we feel, you know, how we self-sabotage, some of the ways that we trip ourselves up because we feel that we just don't deserve the money that we've worked so hard for. And so we recognize that it's not just about, you know, the physical act of earning money, but about, you know, what's happening psychologically as well, what's happening mentally with us. So, you know, you've talked a lot about, you know, living an expansive life and, you know, in particular, and I've been captivated by your social media series, you know, as you've embarked on this new life, in which you've shared very openly your, you know, the various milestones that you've taken very recently, about not settling, about choosing joy, about accepting some of the, you know, arguably less glossy aspects of the human experience, like loneliness. You know, again, something that would have spiked during lockdown, as lots of people, if you're living in households where it's just you, or, you know, you don't have a partner, or whatever the circumstances might be, loneliness was something that definitely spiked. And I think it's one of those things that people, again, would feel a lot of shame about disclosing, or feeling that, you know, when you look through what you think is a window into other people's lives based on their Instagram account, and it looks like everyone's living their best lives, you know, it can really compound these feelings of isolation. And you've talked about, you know, when you share some of the snippets, you know, you've talked about how you've been able to transition on this path. And I'm interested to know, you know, is this an approach to life you've always had, in terms of being very open, being very kind of self-aware, and then thinking about how you can kind of lean into some of those experiences rather than trying to kind of squash them down and act like they're not happening? I mean, what were some of the moments of truth for you in your life that have led you to this way of being? I mean, of course, you've highlighted a big one, but how have you arrived at this point?
Yeah, so the quick answer before I start waffling, yeah, which I'll carry on waffling, of course, but the quick answer is absolutely not, no. As a people pleaser in recovery, I can tell you that I am very shame-based by design. And what that means is you don't want to share anything that you think will make people think bad things about you, right? Mm-hmm. And I say by design because, I mean, what I mean is the way that we've constructed our personality in whatever part of the world we found ourselves in, you know, we sort of create this in ourselves. But I think, therefore, that a really important part of my journey has been in the becoming comfortable with sharing the darker parts of myself bit by bit. And actually, you know, if you talk about your journey to loving yourself, right? Because that's what this is really at the heart of all of this. You start with loving the parts of yourself that are easy, you know, like the good bits. And then the deeper work comes when you love the bits of yourself that are hard, right? And there are elements of, I think, a continual discarding of, you know, the stories that we've told ourselves, the things that we need to be. And in fact, you know, that's a really important part of how we're able to grow. And I think if we talk about the big events, the big major life events, the biggest of all was me being able to say, I've chosen the wrong thing in this relationship, mm-hmm. and I got it wrong.
That's a big deal.
And I need to choose something else. And that wasn't just, you know, there was many levels to that relationship which were destructive. But by the way, also, I don't sit here as the victim. I chose to be in an abusive relationship for 12 years, right? That meant that really the primary abuser in this story is me. I was choosing to be in and stay in and invest in and in that relationship. But a really big part of stepping into becoming more comfortable with shame was actually something that I've been hugely ashamed about for years. A big part of that process of financial recovery was actually declaring myself bankrupt very early on into me leaving that partner. Now, as somebody who'd never missed a payment for anything, the idea of being that person was mortifying. And then for many years, I carried the burden of that secret, thinking mm-hmm. that if people found that out about me, that they would judge me, that they might not employ me, that they might think differently. And I would say what's changed for me really in the past couple of years is that I've reached a place within myself where the only person that it actually matters rejecting me now is me. And therefore, if other people choose not to align themselves with me based on those kinds of decisions, professionally, personally, whatever, I'm good with that, because I'm not going to reject myself again in the way that I did in my 20s. And that feels like a very expansive place to be for me.
I mean, that feels like a flipping massive, like a colossal achievement. It's like, you know, the pinnacle of life achievement, isn't it? To accept yourself and to, I mean, the way you put it, to not reject yourself. And it really makes me think, I mean, how many times a day even do we reject ourselves? Do we tell ourselves that we're bad, or we're wrong, or we're not worthy of love or affection or the higher salary, or to live in the nice area, or to go on the nice holiday, or whatever it is? There are innumerable different ways that we punish ourselves. But you said something very interesting there. And, you know, I'm intrigued by it, because, you know, everything that we talk about in the Rainmaker community is about having agency in your own life, about controlling what you're able to control, about taking baby steps, starting where you are, doing what you can, forgiving yourself, and not beating yourself up for the things that you do, you know, that you don't do brilliantly. But you talked about, you know, you being the primary abuser in that relationship, which is intriguing to me, because I think, you know, when we, in any conversation or discourse around abuse, of course, rightly, the aggressor, in whatever way the aggression manifests itself, rightly should be the person we're pointing the finger at. It is their fault. It is their responsibility, and we cannot be held accountable for other people's actions. But what it sounds like you're saying is that you know, as part of your recovery, you had to almost take responsibility for your part in, I don't want to say enabling, because I don't think that's the right word, but not choosing yourself, I guess. Is that accurate to say? Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that taking responsibility, like, don't get me wrong, there are people who, you know, I come from the privilege of having the choice, right? There are people in situations in the world where they don't have the choice, but you're, you know, and
even
and,
in the UK,
those, exactly right. And those would be, you know, sort of childhood situations and things like that, where you don't have any choice, but whether or not somebody is controlling and manipulating you, I think a big part of you being able to set yourself free from it is realizing that the choice is actually yours. And that, you know, the only person who is ever going to change your life is you. And so I don't see how you can do that without taking responsibility for your role, albeit a lesser role, and albeit, you know, yes, absolutely. Well, is there an aggressor and is there a victim, really? Yes, there is. But, you know, let's be real. My abusive self didn't end at the age of 30 when I left my ex-husband. My abusive self, I'm still in active recovery from, with things like that you just mentioned, like your negative self-talk, right? It doesn't mean it stops. It just means that now I have the awareness to go, hey, sis, who are you talking to?
Yes.
Whoa, hold on a minute. And actually, one of the wonderful things that helped me with that is I actually started to, when I became aware of it, saying that stuff out loud. Because if you can stand in the mirror and say out loud what's in your head, the rational part of yourself goes, who are you talking to? That's
who the hell do you think you're talking to? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I got into that relationship because I did not value myself and I did not think I was worthy. And that was playing out and playing up in all sorts of ways throughout my teenage years before I met that person. And really, he was just an extension of that self-abuse, like the pinnacle of my self-abuse, right? But yeah, I mean, I think taking responsibility and realizing that, you know, and in fact, actually, let's break down that word, responsibility. And that in itself is so powerful. We have the ability to respond. We have agency. We just need to grow big enough within ourselves to realize that we have it and claim it.
I mean, potentially there will be women listening to this and thinking, I hear what you're saying. And from a practical, rational perspective, it makes total sense. I mean, one of the hacks that we use in the community is, you know, when we're thinking about advocating on behalf of someone else, of course, from a financial perspective, you know, if we're struggling to ask for the money, to ask for the pay increase, to ask for, you know, a higher starting salary or whatever, you know, one of the hacks we use is to say, imagine if you were doing it on behalf of your best friend, your sister, your mom, people that you love, that you rate, that you cheerlead, you know, unendingly, what would you say on their behalf? You know, how would you champion them? And how indignant would you be if anyone dared challenge, you know, your assertion that they are worth this higher value? And to apply that principle to yourself. But when it comes these kinds of situations, you know, and thinking about, you know, economic abuse, any other types of situation in which you might be self-sabotaging. I mean, obviously, you've shared one example of how you have, you know, and how it's a process. You know, this is not something, it's not one and done. It's not like you do it and then you're like, wow, I'm liberated from the shackles of my mind or from other people. No, it's a continual process. What are some of the other facets to that process that you have to continually do to make sure that you're staying in good kind of mental, spiritual hygiene?
Yeah. And this is where really, for me, structure is everything. You know, before structure, there was chaos, but let me just be clear, if anybody's in this situation or in a situation that they're sort of hearing themselves in anything that we're saying, really big change comes from tiny, tiny steps and decisions, right? So don't think about the big stuff, think about the little bits. You know, like, what's the thing that you need to decide today? Focus on your near term and see if you can enrich your near term rather than worrying about the big picture if you're in something that, if you're trying to change something that feels big and scary. But I actually think, I say that now because I actually think that to structure your life in a way where you thrive can feel big and scary. And you can look at people who are like, I have the perfect morning routine. I have the perfect evening routine. I have the perfect life routine. And it can look really daunting and overwhelming because it feels like it's too far away from where you are. So my best advice with that is just to start where you are and see whether there's just one thing that you can add into your day tomorrow that makes your day a little bit more dreamy, right? And I'm not suggesting anything big. I'm suggesting like 10 minutes of something, right? And that's how I gradually evolved into a way of being where I thrive, which, by the way, I constantly monitor and change and evolve to make sure that I'm still structuring my life in a way that I thrive. So I know what I need in my well-being toolkit, and I know, you know, the people that I need, the structure that I need, the rest that I need, the food that I need, the, you know, I'm aware of what my consumption of other things are in terms of like television and things like that. So that I'm really careful about my life now, but it's a process and it's a constant process. As you said, I've just moved country. I'm in a different time zone. I'm starting calls much earlier in the day, which means that my early mornings of me time have had to change. So I'm actually in the process right now of how do I optimize my life here when I'm on the East Coast of America and I'm doing lots of stuff with people in the UK. You know, how can I make more of my afternoon time, which is frankly a time of day where my brain goes to sleep? You know, so I'm having to reinvent it all of the time. And I think that's just it. Like, we need to evolve as we evolve, because what I'm finding more and more is that today's well-being initiative or thing that I think is really great is next year's, frankly, abuse some of the time.
Yes. So. Yeah, no, right? I agree. Like the 5 a.m. club or the 4 a.m. club or the 3 a.m. club. Like, any, like, everyone, do you? Like, if 3 a.m. wake up time is your normal, that's cool. But I completely agree with you. It starts to become masochistic after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, if I think about how I've evolved with exercise, so going from no exercise to too much exercise to hard furious exercise like spinning, things like that, to now actually something that's way more balanced and way more intuitive. But I had to kind of go through all of the extremes to get there. So I don't judge or feel bad or shame for the journey that I've gone on with it. But I do feel good that today, I feel like for today, I've found an approach to moving my body that means that I thrive. But I have no doubt that next year it's going to be different.
Yeah, I mean, you've said so much there, and you've touched on some of the different, you know, the importance of well-being and the importance of recognizing, you know, even on a very basic level, knowing when you are your best self professionally. So knowing, you know, now you are in a completely different time zone, but your client base, you know, many of whom still live within the UK. And so what that means is that, you know, you have to adjust yourself, you have to adjust your life around that, but still making sure that your own wellness is very much a priority. Otherwise, everything else kind of falls apart. And I'm interested in this idea of you. I mean, it's like from everything that I've seen and our conversation today and the conversation we had prior to this, you are somebody that is effectively living life with the handbrake off completely. You've taken the handbrake off. You're living life, you know, freely, without guilt, without shame. You're recognizing where you need to change course and you're doing that, but you are not inhibiting yourself in any way. And of course, it's inspiring. And, you know, for all of the Rainmakers, this is very much, you know, the ethos that we want to embody around stepping into who you actually are. Whatever that person is, you know, wherever you sit on this kind of extroversion to introversion scale, but just embracing who you are and what it means to be you and celebrating that. But one of the things, you know, from a financial perspective, we talk about all the time is this idea of reckless caution, and the idea that as women, we have a predisposition to what we consider to be safer options when it comes to our money management. For example, you know, disproportionately saving into cash versus stock market investing, even though there is a huge amount of data and, you know, there's a lot of financial education out there now that points to the fact that investing, particularly over the long term, will outperform cash saving, especially in a hyperinflationary environment like we're in right now. We've seen inflation like off the scale, you know, its highest rate in four decades, like on a global basis. And still, women have a flight to cash because that we feel that it's our safe haven. You know, if we put our money in a cash savings account, it's there. Yes, you know, it might not be growing that much from an interest rate perspective, but at least it's not going to go up in smoke. The stock market, you know, if it's in the stock market, maybe it will bomb and there'll be some kind of Gordon Gekko style catastrophe and we'll lose all our money and then be destitute, right? That same metaphor really can be applied to our lives. And of course, you know, this is a theme almost of this entire conversation, which is around how you have thrown off those shackles. And I think one of the things that you have done and you documented was around, you know, you kind of taking a leap of faith from a love perspective. And we like to talk about love because I think, you know, as much as we talk about money and what it means to build wealth as women and all of these sorts of things, we're not trying to build wealth in a vacuum. For lots of us, you know, and again, there is research that points to this fact. And of course, these are generalizations. But as women, when we think about our money management, we're thinking about how it fits in with the rest of our lives. Are we planning to move abroad, to live a certain lifestyle, retire early, support children and have a family, of course, with partners or without, you know, whatever the circumstances. There are so many different ways that money touches our lives. And so it would be impossible for us to extricate one from the other. And so if you've got these concentric circles and you think about the human relationships we have as kind of sitting in the middle, how did you get past your previous marriage, which, as you've described, was, you know, economically abusive at least, and, you know, fast forwarding almost, a decade later into this brand new relationship with somebody that lived on the other side of the world that you were only able to speak to virtually. And I love the little love story that you shared about, you know, how you were communicating via FaceTime. And of course, he's in lockdown on one side of the world, you're in lockdown in London. What was that like? How did you shift from this position of, you know, as we describe, you know, this generalization around women being recklessly cautious, which in a way that may not necessarily serve us over the long term, to actually being like, no, I'm going to take a gamble on this. You know, I really like this guy. Like, what was that? Talk us through the love story.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I would say that I've only been able to embrace this love because I first and foremost have built a loving relationship with myself. And second of all, I did a lot of dating experimentation for 10 years where I was, and I don't necessarily mean that in a fruity way. I mean, I realize how that sounded, but, it was literally like I was my own human experiment of dating. Like, if I date this kind of person, what happens? If I date that kind of person, what happens? Right. And what I learned was, a handful of years of doing that, I then learned the power of my values. And once I was able to codify what my values were, and that is something that, by the way, has been emergent and they change and they grow, I realized it becomes less about needing someone that has exactly the same values as you, but you absolutely need to be with somebody who you can be your values with. And so my dating, therefore, became much more discerning. But I was literally my own dating startup, my friends, where I was like, okay, I'm going to test this one. No, okay, move on, next, right? Where are we going?
Yeah.
How
do I get to my MVP?
Right, exactly right. But when Devon arrived, neither of us expected it. So to our listeners, we met online via Tinder only because of COVID, because COVID said, hey, folks, who wants to use the passport function for free in Tinder around the world because we're in a pandemic? I, at the age of already 40, went, absolutely not. You must be mad. Devon, Mr. Commitment Phobe, forever singleton, no intention of meeting anyone, went, hell yeah.
Wow.
So that's how he wound up in my Tinder garden. So, I mean, I think for both of us, I entered into conversations with him having no expectations of it becoming anything more. And he entered into conversations with me feeling like I was safe. It was safe to have conversations with me because I was in the UK and he was in America and we were never going to meet.
This is hilarious.
Right? And so, but what that gave us was the perfect healing opportunity for both of us. Right? Mm-hmm. Because I then wasn't able to get too attached into the thing that I was exploring because I didn't have any expectations. And for him, he was able to lean into the idea of a relationship that he hadn't really allowed himself yet. And honestly, we both say if we had been in the same country, we would not be where we are now. But because of the way that we met, it is like a modern day love story. Our first date was in St. Lucia, my friends, because it was one of only five or six places we could actually meet physically in October 2020. So it sounds very decadent, but it was actually quite a practical choice. But what I want to say about making those really big choices and setting yourself free is I think a lot of us are under the misconception that we'll suddenly reach a point where everything gets easy and we're not afraid anymore. Mm-hmm. But actually, in truth, because of our nervous system and our brains working to keep us safe, my friends, we're always going to be afraid. We're always going to be afraid. But what we can get better at is holding fear in our bodies and making it our friend and being able to have a dialogue with our brain and our nervous system that goes, look, I appreciate your concern, but we're good, right? I appreciate your concern, but we're not going to die by doing this. I appreciate your concern, but do you see? And so it's
your concern. It makes me feel less rude about it, even to myself and to other people.
I know you're trying to protect me. I get that. And I love you for it. I love you for trying to protect me, but I'm going to put my big girl pants on and make this. Because I can do it. I can be free. And I would honestly say that remains a work in progress for me. I'm just getting better at holding fear in my body and choosing to do the thing anyway. But I would say that that is still a process for me. I'm still stepping into becoming the fullest expression of myself. And I think that maybe I always will be. But I do think that at its heart, for anybody that's listening and thinking that they want a piece of that, it's really just about making friends with fear.
I love that. I love the idea. And also recognizing that there are very few things that we do in our daily lives that don't invite some element of fear, you know, however macro or micro they are. You know, there are things that we do, even just crossing the road. Like, I'm terrible at crossing the road anyway. I'm ridiculous, to be honest. But, you know, just anything that you do, you know, there is a risk. There is a risk. There is a risk of action. There is a risk of inaction. And you've really got to weigh up those probabilities. I mean, again, that's one of the things that we talk about all the time. Doing nothing, you might think, is a safe option. In many ways, quite often, it's riskier than doing something, taking some action that has the potential to move you forwards. And I think, you know, as you've said, you know, having, you know, making friends with fear is just a great way to encapsulate that entire, you know, that energy, that mood, and that way of being. So what do you think, you know, 22-year-old Ruth would think of the Ruth you are today? What, you know, or, you know, the Ruth that was in the thick of that relationship thinking, oh God, how did I find myself here? Where does this end? What do you think she would make of who you are now?
Honestly, this really, really strikes a chord, because I had a moment where I was looking, we got our wedding pictures back, because by the way, friends, we got married. We got married. I'm in America. Here we are. Not quite 2 years since our first call. Here I am. Ta-da!
Brilliant.
But I had a moment, honestly, where I looked at our wedding pictures and I burst into tears. And obviously it's an emotional moment because I'm marrying a man that's beyond my wildest dreams. But the biggest point of all is that I looked at that photograph and I saw a woman that is beyond my wildest dreams, right? I have become a woman that my younger self did not even imagine was possible. It wasn't ever a goal. It was so much more than that. So I wept joyful, beautiful tears looking at this picture of myself, because it was so poignant and striking. Like, this isn't ever, you know, this isn't somebody meeting their goals. This is somebody leaning into a life that is beyond what they could have ever imagined for themselves. I don't know if that makes sense or if it...
It does. No. And the thing is, right? For anybody listening that doesn't follow Ruth on social media, I mean, we're going to put it in the show notes and Ruth can tell everyone how you can follow her at the end of this episode. But please follow her on social media, on LinkedIn, on Instagram. If you look at those wedding pictures, you can see, you can feel, it's like a visceral energy. You can feel the joy leaping through the screen. So, you know, for people, for anybody that's in a situation where you've given up on love, or you're thinking, or you've experienced some of what Ruth is sharing, because there are lots of women, you know, and your 40s can be a very tricky time as a woman, yeah, whether you're married or unmarried, whatever your relationship status. And it really does spark a sense of what's possible. And I think that's powerful. I think that's super powerful. As I say, you look at the pictures and like gold dust and glitter, like springs out of the shot. I mean, yeah, you can't, I don't think that's something that you can fake.
No, I don't. But I also think though, and I think this is the really important point, the only person that got me here is me. Right? Mm-hmm. Because this isn't about some knight in shining armor arriving from America to rescue this woman in her 40s who didn't think that she'd ever find love. This is a hero's journey from my perspective. I saved myself and I claimed my life and I built a new one and I raised my vibration and my self-awareness to a place where I invited in somebody whose energy reflected that. So I don't want this to sound like some sort of, you know, as women, we're waiting for someone to come and rescue us.
The Mills and Boone.
Yeah, exactly right. The point here is that we are the most important leader that we need in our lives. And as soon as we can rise up and claim it, we can invite in a life that we didn't think was possible. But it's only because of who we believe ourselves to be.
Amen. I absolutely love that. Please follow Ruth, everyone. Right. So, okay. So back to the money then, because of course this is a podcast about women and wealth. Yeah. So, and of course, wealth manifests itself in a number of different ways. So I think, you know, given your journey, given all of the different things that you've experienced, what does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I think being wealthy, it's an interesting one. So, I mean, obviously, as you can probably guess, folks, my spiritual wealth definitely comes first. But that is something, you know, love is a resource that we will never run out of, right? So I apply that liberally. But my work is in creating a wealth that exists beyond the hours that I work, right? So yes, I've been able to create a very successful career for myself, and I feel very fortunate and very blessed to have put my big girl pants on and put myself in that situation. But I think real wealth is in freedom, right? Is found in freedom. And I think that the majority of us women have a lot of work to do when it means actually truly creating that for ourselves, and owning it and kind of leaning into it. So my work right now is on how I create that freedom. And that's the kind of process that I'm going through when I'm looking at the business that I'm building, the way that I'm structuring my world, and the things that I'm choosing to invest in, having a long-term view rather than a kind of short-term, okay, well, that's a great salary, let me do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess going a bit deeper into this idea of financial freedom, of course it means different things to different people, and you've kind of outlined there what it means to you. What are the specifics around financial freedom in your mind? Do you intend to, I don't know, retire early, or is work something that, you know, you love meeting clients, you love, you know, supporting people to achieve all of the things that they want to achieve? You know, what does, in practical terms, financial freedom look like in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot in that, right? I think for me, really, being able to live feeling free in my day and joyfully fulfilled is really what that means. And that doesn't mean that I'm not working. That means that I'm working in a way that is in service of what I believe to be my purpose, you know? It's that I'm doing things that enable me to be the fullest expression of myself, or at least, as we've said, folks, working towards it, right? But I think really for me, it's being able to dictate my working life in a way that means that I'm able to fulfill other roles in my life too. It's creating spaciousness to be able to think and imagine And so I've only just in the past year set myself free from being employed. And I really am reveling in the space, the time to think, there's a whole creative energy that's now unleashed in me that had been dormant before. So, I mean, I think that anything that keeps me in that place of growth, challenge, yet also creating as much freedom as possible. But yeah, certainly in my case, that doesn't mean that I never work, but it just means that, you know, I do things that really kind of set my soul on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds super compelling and very in keeping with the person that you are. And I imagine, you know, for lots of us, exactly as you say, the idea that you have the freedom to set the course of your day, I think for lots of women, that's a feeling, even I'm sure, you know, as many women listen to this, taking the time to listen to a podcast, perhaps on a walk, perhaps on your commute into the office, you might be on the school run or whatever the case may be, you know, just giving yourself some breathing space to do some things for yourself, I think can really make such a massive difference in terms of contributing to that sense of freedom. And then of course, making sure that the finances are aligned to that just kind of accelerates, you know, really accelerates that journey and that process. What would you say, getting really into your business, what would you say has been your best financial investment so far? And what has been your worst, if you have one?
Oh, wow. Well, so, I mean, I think the best financial investment that, I mean, I am not somebody, I am your textbook woman with money in the bank and, mm-hmm. You know, that's leaning into getting better at actually investing, actual money. But where I've never had a problem in the past few years investing money, and where I would say I've always won, is anything that brings me closer to me, right? So, So anything that develops my self-awareness or develops my confidence or, you know, self-belief or any of those things, anything that helps me become more selfish.
Yes.
Actually. because I honestly think it might sound counterintuitive, but for us as leaders and as people building families, building businesses, whatever we're building, our relationship with ourselves is the thing that will provide the foundation for our relationships with everybody else. So the more that we invest in that, the more that we supercharge our relationships with others. And in terms of the worst, I mean, my worst financial investment was definitely in my former relationship, which I mean, I wouldn't even like to see the bill.
Oh God. Yeah.
I mean,
just racking actually, up those costs.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. But importantly, to my last point, I was not investing in myself at all at that time in any way, shape or form. So, I think that any investment that I've made into my growth, my freedom, whether it's learning a skill that means that I feel more confident setting up a website or setting up a podcast or, you know, all of these little things that maybe don't feel like big things, they add up into the greatest, you know, greatest gifts that can really set us free.
I love that, Ruth. So my final question then, before we get to our quickfire round, is, of course, this is a podcast about making it rain. So can you share with us, you know, one key moment in your life in which you absolutely, unequivocally made it rain? And why are you particularly proud of it? You know, how have you really sparked kind of transformational change in your life that you're proud of? You've already given us dozens of examples, but
well, honestly, I think we all have the power to make it rain when we really lean into our superpower. And one of my superpowers that I took for granted, because I just thought it was how everybody was. And by the way, in case that's you and you're like, what are my strengths? I don't know. Go and do the StrengthsFinder assessment and read things about yourself that you take for granted and relearn yourself in a new way. Because I would say that honestly, I have a tendency, a disposition that means that I love strangers like old friends. So I greet strangers like old friends when I meet them. It doesn't mean that we necessarily become friends until the end of time, but what it's done is it's enabled me to bring joy into the lives of others and hold up a mirror potentially to help other people look at like what their strengths are, what the things that they bring. And I think that being able to form an immediate connection with humans really, in my experience, has enabled a different level of honesty and relationship with those people. And it was something that I took for granted. And now that I realize that it really is a great gift and strength, I love it. And I love that about me.
Yeah, we love it too. It's ultimately your superpower. okay, so now three quickfire questions. I'm going to pick them at random. So the first one is, complete this sentence, a rainmaker is someone who is or does what?
Oh, a rainmaker is someone who becomes unapologetic about their superpower and allows it to embody everything that they do.
Love that. Finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am What?
Anybody that knows me would be surprised to learn that I'm actually quite introverted. A fun fact for our listeners, but our personalities are essentially a construct. They're a series of ways of being that we've created to create safety for ourselves in the world, right? And my personality and my ability to connect to others, probably to my last answer, has been created rather than, it's not necessarily there by design. So I'm actually quite thoughtful. I'm actually, I need space. I need quiet time. So yeah, that was a long answer. I'm sorry. That was not quick fire.
No, that's fine. That is fine. And then my final question is, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
Love, baby. We can all make it rain with that. Like, literally.
Yeah, we can.
It's the resource that we're never going to run out of. And honestly, if we can all just dial up on that a little bit more, the world will be a much better place.
That's such a happy note to end this podcast on. Ruth, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you if they'd like to connect and find out more?
Ah, yes. And by the way, I am always looking for new humans. So please do come and find me. LinkedIn, Ruth Penfold Brown. You'll be able to probably read the background of my relationship there too. And also Instagram at Ruth Penfold. They're probably the two best places.
Amazing. Ruth, thank you so much for your time today and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. This was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.